You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
630 Chad Inside Sports with Reed Wilkins. Weekdays at 6 on 630 Chad.
We are still looking for a goal between the Flames and the Maple Leafs. 13 and a half minutes left in the third. Toronto is out shooting Calgary 29-18. Another good showing from David Rittich, who got the shutout a couple of days ago. First Calgary Flames goalie to ever get a shutout in Toronto. The last goalie playing for a team called the Flames. 1977, Yves Boulanger got a shutout in Toronto. Flyers lead the Rangers 4-2 early in the third. Lightning shut out the Hurricanes 3-0. Two good teams going at it there, and a rare loss for the Florida Panthers, who are doing very well this season. They are beaten 3-0 by the Dallas Stars. Ducks and Coyotes just underway. Same deal with the Wild and the Avalanche, and the Kings and the Blues will drop the puck in about half an hour. Tomorrow, of course, we have the Oilers and the Canucks on 6:30, Chad. 6 o'clock for the face-off show. The game will start at 8. The Montreal Canadiens tomorrow will visit the Winnipeg Jets. Dominic Ducharme will make his coaching debut for the Habs as Claude Julien fired today. And for further discussion, a man I'm very grateful for coming on the show because it's after 9 in Montreal. And I can speak from experience on a day when there's a coaching change. It's generally a very busy day for members of the media. So Eric Engels from Sportsnet.ca, I'll try to make this like it's, a break. You know, like, remember SCTV, every show started Thursday at 9. So we'll pretend this is an SCTV show Wednesday at 9. Maybe make it a little entertaining. Sound fair?
Sounds good to me.
How are things there today? I mean, I'm sure all the Canadiens fans are level-headed and sober about this move today.
I'm sure they are also. And by the way, I don't mind speaking after 9. I don't sleep during hockey season, so I wasn't planning on getting much tonight. I will admit I'm a little regretful that I went to bed at 3:30 in the morning yesterday. I did have some inclination, not necessarily that Claude Julien would get fired today, but that it was certainly headed in this direction. I think if you got a glimpse of what I wrote last night at sportsnet.ca, the evidence was kind of mounting. So it's been an extremely busy day. It's not over, and you're not the last people I'm speaking to, so don't feel bad.
Okay, good. Well, I do like having you on the show because you're very knowledgeable and very well spoken about what's going on in the Canadiens. Okay, but give me and everybody else, if they didn't see it, the Coles notes of that column and why maybe this wasn't a shock for you when it broke this morning.
Yeah, look, the Canadiens have lost 6 of 8 games. There have been some disturbing trends in their play after getting off to a 7-1-2 start in a season where the expectations were already high to begin with all the moves that Marc Bergevin made. And, you know, when you see that the power play has gone 1-for-21 and that it's been a problem for 3 years straight, despite the fact that some pieces like Tyler Toffoli and Josh Anderson were brought in to solidify or at least make it a little bit better. You know, I don't think they were under any illusions that it would be a top 5 power play without an Austin Matthews or a Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl or a Elias Pettersson, but 20th is not good enough. 22nd on the penalty kill with the personnel they have is ludicrous. That's a major problem. And when you see them, as Marc Bergevin put it today, running around with their heads cut off in their own zone, or at least appearing that way, not literally doing that, that's problematic. And when they're taking the second most penalties in the league and not drawing very many as one of the fastest teams in the league, which I don't think anybody outside of Montreal would debate, that's a disturbing trend that's continued from beginning of the season to now. And when you start losing games hand over fist and those trends persist, regardless of the fact that the Canadiens probably should have won in Ottawa last night and were robbed of a goal that Brendan Gallagher scored that you know, he made his thoughts known on and was quite justified in what he said, that he had enough time to reset after being on the floor of the crease and getting jumped and then standing up and tipping a puck, that Matt Murray should have had enough time to reset after some contact with Gallagher in the crease. I thought that was a pretty good case that he made. I made it myself before he even said it. And yeah, you know, even in spite of that, like, the Canadiens' trends continue to be troublesome ones. So, you know, the writing was on the wall for Claude Julien here. And Marc Bergevin said today he wanted a new voice, a new energy behind his bench. And he's got one now in Dominique Ducharme. Regardless of the fact that Ducharme's been here for the last 2 years, he hasn't had the type of input anywhere near it, actually, that he will now.
Yeah. Okay, and I want to talk about Ducharme, but let me ask you your sense of, A, from the fan base, and perhaps, B, from the few people in the organization higher than Marc Bergevin, how much criticism is he taking? Because ultimately he made some big moves, and he's the guy that assembled most of the roster.
You know, I really don't know, because, A, we're very disconnected from the fans beyond what we catch on social media. And I think I've come to learn, despite having a large following there, that it's not necessarily representative of how everybody feels. And typically the people that I do hear from are kind of the unsilent minority. You know what I mean?
Right.
The people that like to have their voices heard, but not necessarily the pensive, thoughtful type. So I can't really say. I do know that there is a level of, you know, impatience in the Bergevin era. But all of that said, you know, if you took a poll of Canadiens fans coming into this season after the moves that he made, if you polled National Hockey League executives, if you went across each province, if you went to each market in the NHL and said, what do you think of the work Marc Bergevin did from the bubble to the start of the season? I think the general consensus, a large one, in fact, a massive majority would have said that he did some incredible work. And then you see the start of the season and you see that Josh Anderson has, I think it's 9 goals, and he's playing like a freight train, and Joel Edmondson's leading the league in plus minus, or at least was up until a couple of games ago, if he's not anymore. Tyler Toffoli has 12 goals in 18 games. Jake Allen has a .932 save percentage. Like, let's face it, you know, this guy has deserved whatever criticism has come his way in the past. He also deserves the praise that he got in the offseason. He put together a team that I think we all can probably agree is better than what they've shown over the last 8 games. All of that said, you know, take it away from the fan base and what I think is the general consensus across the hockey world. He's got an owner above him that spent over $100 million in the offseason, not counting kind of the entry-level deals. And that pressure is on, and if for whatever reason this move with Dominique Ducharme doesn't work, I think that would probably spell the end of the Bergevin era. So the Canadiens have to right the ship. They've got to make the playoffs. They've got to be a team that could potentially do some damage there once they get there. That'll come down to health and all that stuff. But, you know, they have what it takes. I believe they're a much better team than what they've shown over these 8 games, and I can't wait to see if Dominique Ducharme can get out his tool belt and get to work.
So, I mean, he was he coached in the Q. I believe he won a silver and a gold as the World Junior head coach. What do you expect him to bring that Julien and Muller, I suppose, weren't bringing?
I don't really want to speculate because he was so not forthcoming in terms of strategy. I do believe, you know, he's an offensive specialist, but he's not someone who's going to sacrifice defense to find offense. I think one of the things that I would anticipate him addressing specifically is from the dots and in the offensive zone. Too much of the Canadiens' offense and the way they try to generate it is from the point. That's something that I kind of tackled as an issue a couple weeks ago as these trends were starting to present themselves that were negative, and something that didn't change under Claude Julien that I think will be one of the first things that Dominique Ducharme looks at. And one of the reasons for that is because that's what Bruce Cassidy did with the Bruins when he took over for Claude Julien. And, you know, since then they've been the first full year with Cassidy as coach of the Bruins, they've been the 6th most offensive team in the NHL. So I think we could see something there. Ducharme mentioned something about how he'd like to see the puck carrier more supported, give the puck carrier a bit more options and a way to have everybody work more together, more cohesive kind of effort on the offensive side of things. The power play is going to get a boost with Alex Burrows coming in and having his input on what happens there as an assistant coach. That's going to be his main area of focus. The penalty kill is going to run exclusively under Luke Richardson, under Ducharme's supervision. It better be something a lot better than what we've seen. It's perplexing, as I mentioned before, how bad it's been. At 22nd in the league, there's just, they have 7 shorthanded goals. It's not like they do everything bad, but when they're in their own end, I can't really put my finger on what it is they're trying to accomplish there, and it's just so confusing. So I think that's going to change, but those things, the special teams in particular, could take some time to set in. So Ducharme, because this move was made with 36 games left on the schedule, has a bit of time. He doesn't have a lot of it, and the Canadian schedule is jam-packed. They don't have more than 2 days off for 2 months. And he's going to have to really be smart about how he manages practice time and video time and incorporates these new ideas and gets them going quick enough so that the Canadians can benefit from them.
Okay, so to be clear here, Ducharme's the interim head coach. So do we see how it goes? And I should remind everybody, Mike Babcock's 2 years at the University of Saskatchewan coming up.
Yeah, I'm not sure who you'd be reminding of that, but I don't think. Let's not even go there. Dominic Ducharme is being given, you know, the opportunity of his career, and he will be there between now and the end of the season. There won't be another coaching change under Mark Bergevin. But the fact that he was given the interim tag, you know, tells me that ownership wants to see how it goes. He's a rookie coach. And also that ownership wants to see how this whole thing goes. You know, if for whatever reason it doesn't work and Ducharme can't pull them out of this with the expectations they have and the money that's been spent, you know, I think that would spell the end of the Mark Bergevin era in Montreal. And I think you would want a new GM who's coming in to choose who he wants to be his coach, whether that's Ducharme or somebody else. So there's a lot of reasons why the interim tag makes sense right now. But Mark Bergevin was unequivocal in saying that Dom Ducharme is 100% his guy and that he believes in him and that he's confident in him. And he, you know, I honestly, look, I know we've seen two versions of the Canadians this year. I know this team quite well, and I know what they're capable of. I believe they're not necessarily as good as they showed at the beginning of the year where they were scoring 5 goals a game. But I do believe they're much closer to being that team than the one we've seen over the last 8 games.
Okay. Well, I mean, this is the fun thing about the North Division. The storylines are more tightly intertwined in this country than ever before. So we'll see if they can stay in that top four. I mean, right now, it's kind of, there's kind of 3 tiers. It's Toronto, then it's Winnipeg, Edmonton, and Montreal, and then it's Vancouver and Calgary and Ottawa. That's kind of how it's looking right now. Maybe Edmonton has it. Edmonton might have a chance to reel in the Leafs a little bit here starting on the weekend. We'll see how it goes.
Maybe. I would suggest that if Montreal is a team that has underachieved in the last 8 games, Calgary is a team that's underachieved since the beginning of the season. And I don't think it will be all that long before they're in this conversation. I think the Flames are a much better team than they've shown so far, a much deeper team than a lot of the other teams in Canada at every position. And I know people in Edmonton might not want to hear that, but I think if you're pointing at one team here that can do a lot more than they've shown so far, it's that one.
No, actually, I think a lot of people in Edmonton would agree with you, and I think a lot of people in Edmonton, me included, were surprised the Flames were relatively lifeless in the 2 Battle of Alberta games over the weekend, and they have not been scored on by the Maple Leafs in almost 2 full games now, so we'll see how that one goes. Eric, it's always great to talk to you, man. Thanks for joining us as your busy day continues, but I know you love doing it. We'll talk to you down the road, man. Take care.
Thanks for having me. Take care.
That is Eric Engels, covers the Montreal Canadiens for Sportsnet.ca. So as he was telling you, he could kind of see something coming there with the way it had been going for Montreal lately. So Claude Julien is out. Kirk Muller is out. Dominic Ducharme becomes the interim head coach. And Alex.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Burrows joins the coaching staff. It is 20 after 7. It's Inside Sports on 630 Chet. Minutes and 20 seconds left in Toronto. No score between the Flames and the Leafs, but my goodness, the shots on goal are 36-19 for Toronto. So David Rittich having another big outing in the Flames net. We'll see if he can get him a point or two out of this game. I saw some stuff on social media. Oilers fans conflicted who to hope for in this series. But like I said earlier, if the Flames were to win in regulation and Edmonton were to win tomorrow, they're just 2 points behind Toronto with three games coming up against the Leafs. It's fun. It's fun watching the standings this year for sure. The CertainTeed hotline is 780-496-0063. CertainTeed, professional-grade building materials, pro all the way. Chris has given us a dingle tonight. Chris, thanks a lot for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, Reed. Yeah, you were, by the way, Calgary just scored. So.
Oh, they did?
Yeah,
okay.
FYI. You were sort of not asking a question, but just making comments about what the change was potentially for the Oilers. And what was the exact time, what was the record of the Oilers when when Smith came back? Because to me, that guy is he's got so much energy and drive, and I just feel like the team has played way better in front of him, and I think even in front of Koskinen now, because I think Koskinen's better since he came back as well.
Were they not 4-7 when Smith came back?
Yeah.
Does that sound right?
Yeah.
Just double-checking here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So they were 3-6. Then they got up to 6-6. They were 6-7 when he came back.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So their record then is pretty darn good since he's been here. And so, I don't know. I think that's a huge, huge thing for the Oilers. And I don't know. Even though Koskinen, I don't think played that bad at the start of the year, but I just think the confidence level is completely different with Smith in the net.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I mean, he's doing it physically. I don't know if you heard last week, I interviewed a development coach, Adam Francilia, that he worked with in September and October because he wanted to be better than ever at the age of 38 and 39. And he does add energy and confidence to the team, I think, just with his personality and experience. Now, you still got to go out there and play, but I do think he has an impact on the overall attitude of the team. I will grant you that for sure, Chris.
Cool. All right. Well, I appreciate your show. And hopefully I'm unfortunately, a lot of people would say I'm a Leaf fan, and so I don't like to see them losing, but I love the Oilers, and I'm hoping for a Leaf-Oiler Canadian, final as far as their division goes. So,
well, yeah, the playoffs are going to be incredible. Leafs just pulled their goalie here with 2 minutes left. Thanks, Chris. That is Chris on the CertainTeed hotline. What's ahead for Tiger Woods? Grant Fedoruk next. Overtime just underway in Toronto. So, yes, while we are in break, the Leafs tied at Nylander on a crazy goal-mouth scramble at 18:32 of the third, not long after Mangiapane had scored the game's first goal at 16:33. So 1-0 Flames and Maple Leafs. They are in overtime. Late in the third, Phillies up 4-3 on the Rangers. In the first period, Minnesota leads Colorado 1-0. Zuccarello, the goal there. No score in the first between the Ducks and Coyotes. Later, well, coming up in a few minutes, Kings and Blues. Lightning beat the Hurricanes 3-0. Florida loses at home to Dallas 3-0. The final there. Oilers and Vancouver tomorrow on 6:30 Ched. The faceoff show will start. at 6. The game will start at 8 as the Oilers try to make it 5 wins in a row. They've won 10 of their last 12. Okay, so the UCLA Medical Center put out some information last night, and it was on the Tiger Woods Twitter account. As the Leafs win it in overtime, a minute 6 in, Nylander scores. He also got the tying goal. Mr. Woods suffered orthopedic injuries to his right lower extremity that were treated during emergency surgery. Open fractures affecting both the upper and lower portions of the tibia and fibula bones were stabilized by inserting a rod into the tibia. Additional injuries to the bones of the foot and ankle were stabilized with a combination of screws and pins. There was also trauma to the muscle and soft tissue of the leg that required surgical release. That's some of the medical terminology. Some of that probably makes sense to you. Some of it might have you scratching your head. So to elaborate, we have Grant Fedoruk from Leading Edge Physiotherapy, and he and I have had several golf-oriented discussions over the years, many of them centered on Tiger Woods. Grant, thanks for coming on the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Reed.
Well, we appreciate you chiming in on this. From what you read there, and I know obviously you've been following this as close as anybody.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds really, really bad. Like, it sounds like multiple fractures, just damage pretty much everywhere to the right leg. What are you making of all that?
Yeah, just to explain it for people, comminuted fracture means he shattered. It was broken in many directions, not just a clean break. And an open fracture is a compound fracture, means it was exposed to the world through the skin, sadly. And that puts a big risk to him, as a matter of fact, a risk of infection, and especially infection, because now it's exposed to, you know, clothing and any debris that would have been around, and he was obviously in the woods, so there's a big risk there. So they would have spent a lot of time debriding, sterilizing the environment, and he'd be on a considerable amount of antibiotics trying to prevent that infection. And then what they did is they inserted a rod. The rod that they're talking about, there's a canal in the middle of your bone that carries the blood flow for the bone, and essentially it's also a great place that they can put a rod down it and fixate and kind of put things back together. So if it sounds like carpentry, it is. It's very complicated carpentry done in a surgical suite, of course, and then pins and screws to fixate some of the fractures in his foot. I mean, the what I'm reading talks about a lot about the fracture, but you know, there's so much more would have happened in that accident to this jet. Number one, you know, I'm a huge fan. So as concerned as anybody, and most important, I'm glad that he survived and we've got Tiger Woods to hear from for years. But a lot of the other injuries that we are yet to find out about, including the fasciotomy. And what that means is he had so much pressure built up because of the trauma to the leg. And there's something called compartments in your shin area. And it's held together kind of by this, think of it like cheesecloth, but it's firm and it doesn't allow the expansion. So if there's a lot of expansion, that pressure can put direct pressure on the nerves. It can put pressure on the muscle in the area, the vessels in the area. And so what they did is they released that by cutting that tissue and allowing it to have somewhere to go, essentially. And that's what they were talking about the fasciotomy. So very important. But again, okay. I think I've been taught. I know I told you lots to unpack here.
Well, no, there is. And sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I thought I was detecting a pause, but that's okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to ask a possibly stupid question, but I want to ask it because you know, you get texting with buddies when something like this happens. Yesterday, would have amputation ever been a concern with this type of an injury?
The surgeons are amazing. Orthopedic surgeons can do amazing things to put this back together. You wouldn't believe some of the things I've seen put back together. So where amputation is a concern at this point now is that infection. So if in fact he gets bone infection and they're unable to control the infection, what that can lead to is what we call osteomyelitis or osteonecrosis. The bone can actually start to die and other things can happen, because if it gets infected, it can put a person's life at risk. And so in that circumstance, perhaps, but let's not go there. Obviously, let's hope okay. that and believe that he was in very, very good hands and they would have done everything to put him back together. So, you know, if they got that infection and everything they can do to kind of control and make sure that it doesn't happen, but you can't predict that. So certainly it's still a risk out there to him for sure.
Okay. All right, so here's the big question. What's the recovery? I mean, maybe we shouldn't. Do we even worry about playing golf? Do we just worry more about him walking normally someday?
Yeah, I think that's a big question right now. And I was talking about the other injuries. He's got a history of a disc problem in his neck, as an example. He just underwent surgery in his back, and that's five surgeries later. So if you can imagine the amount of trauma that he faced with his legs, you can just take that a step further and say, well, what else has he injured? And the first thing they do is they have to stabilize him medically, and that's deal with the fractures that they are looking at. But yet we're yet to find out what more happened in that accident. When you roll a vehicle like that, and that kind of catastrophic accident is going to lead to other problems. So I think when you look at athletes of this nature and the motivation that they've got, the strength, the stamina, and everything that they've got going for them, then you can't say it won't happen, that's for sure. But he's also 45 years old, and you know, he doesn't have use on his side and those amazing healing properties that we had back in our days. So you know, look at something like this and you hope for the best, but I mean, maybe the best case scenario is he gets to play some rounds with Charlie at some point and walk his daughter down the aisle. I don't want to sound, you know, I don't want to make this sound very dramatic, but it is a dramatic. This was a very severe injuries he's facing, and the recovery is long. He's going to be non-weight bearing for at least 2 months plus before he's even starting to put weight on that leg. And Reed, one of the things I always talk about is they're putting the bones back together, but when there's no weight on a limb, the amount of weakness and the amount of stiffness that forms in all of the joints. Remember, he's also had surgery on his left knee 5 times, and he's had Achilles problems. So he's looking at a lot of different things that he's going to be facing in his rehab over the next year. And I'd even say it wouldn't be unreasonable to talk about this being like 18 months plus of rehab. So, yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Grant Fedoruk from Leading Edge Physiotherapy joining us today on Inside Sports, talking about the Tiger Woods crash, the injuries and the recovery that he's facing. Did you watch the HBO documentary from about 4 or 5 weeks ago?
Oh, you, absolutely. You should know that about me, Reed. I mean,
well, I was pretty sure.
I was watching it when it came out.
I was pretty sure you would have watched it. I just didn't want to put you on the spot and assume. Yeah. I mean, like, and you and I are both fascinated by Woods. You might be a little bit more of a fan, whereas I was more of a just like, let's see what he can do, who can challenge him along the way. But we both certainly appreciated him. I mean, it was an interesting documentary because, you know, I think there's a dark side to the relationship with the dad. And I know a lot of people aren't going to like the way Tiger, you know, behaved with his wife and the affairs and stuff like that. What did you think of that documentary?
You know, I've got a lot of more respect for him coming out of it, to be frank. I am a fan, but I certainly had concerns with, and we're talking non-medically here, obviously, how he carried himself through those years, being a big fan of his and kind of holding him to high esteem. But that being said, putting it into a big picture and seeing some of the history, and some of which you know, but then they put it in that light, you kind of say, well, you know, really, the way he is or who he is, it's all a product of how we're raised a lot of times. And really impressed me that he's been able to achieve and do what he's been able to do with some of those kind of things that went on in his upbringing. I think others might not have done the same thing. So, it's tough because I've had my ups and downs, and I've been very disappointed at times, mostly wishing that he'd just look after himself and especially his body. Yeah.
Well, the stuff with going, because I read the Hank Haney book, The Big Miss, That's when I first kind of realized, like, he was like doing full on military exercises that could have ended his career. Like he was in an odd place there mentally for a while.
Yeah, and it's interesting because if you actually hear how he's been interviewed, he's been asked what's the thing he regrets or that he might have done different. And one of the things he talks about is he wouldn't have run as much, you know, as an example. And so that to me is he's kind of clued in on the fact that golf was his career, but he kind of put himself through things that might have been unnecessary and led to earlier wear on his body than what he might have otherwise. I mean, you go through Navy SEALs training and decide that's the direction you're going to go. I mean, I know a few guys here in Edmonton that went through it, and it was a boot camp versus what he was doing. And I'll tell you, the training that they went through to get there was astronomical. And the injuries they kind of went through getting to the boot camp, let alone going through it. So I can speak to that just a little bit and say that what he put himself through was nothing short of very aggressive training.
Beyond what you and I might put it. Yeah, especially if we had another profession that we were one of the best in the world at, right?
I don't know if we would have. And I say this, and this is kind of an allusion to like what we saw Connor McDavid go through. You know, those athletes, they've got another level. And it's one we don't understand, and I'm not going to pretend to. But because of that, they've also got this drive and this motivation and also this body that can. And this is why I would say you can't count him out. Certainly, I would never do that because he's proven even myself wrong. 5 back surgeries, I'll tell you, I was a naysayer too. Standing there at that Masters in 2019, I was one of the ones that couldn't believe it because, you know, I have patients who go through 5 back surgeries and we're just happy to have them being able to enjoy watching a hockey game of their kids sitting in the stands, let alone performing at that level at the Masters. So, I mean, hopefully the GOAT here, the greatest of all time, is able to, you know, just overcome yet another obstacle. But at the same time, as a human being, I just want him to come through this and able to enjoy the rest of his life too. So.
Yeah. Well, when you did a great segment with me about being in that gallery in 2019 and really he won 15 majors, so they're all significant, but win in 2019 in his 40s after all the physical trauma and the 2008 US Open, I mean, for all intents and purposes on one leg. I mean, those to me are, I know we won by 12 shots and 15 shots and in playoffs, but just from the overcoming physical ailments, those last two majors are the pinnacle, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And think about 2008 too, and this weighs into what he's facing now. He had a stress fracture in his left tibia, and on top of that, he had an ACL tear. Both were repaired. So we're talking about somebody who's also in that accident, wasn't, you know, in the best as far as what he was put back together. He's in great shape, but his body wasn't in the exact same shape as you and me that haven't faced those kind of injuries over our lifetime. So again, his recovery is going to be absolutely not simple, very complicated by all of the other injuries that he's dealing with at the same time. But no, I agree with you, Reed. I tell you, 2008, and you knew what he was in and that pain. And I think that HBO special, wasn't that neat to see kind of some of the comments that were made? Like, he was told, you should just go home. He's like, no, I'm going to win this thing. Right?
Yeah, I know. That's.
I'm going home.
Yeah. And I mentioned there's sort of a dark side with the dad, which I don't feel uncomfortable calling it that, but also because the dad threw everything at him as a kid, you know, like, I love that clip where there was a family friend playing golf with them and Earl kept talking while Tiger was trying to swing. And finally the family friend was like, can you maybe let your son hit? And Earl's like, no, I'm doing it on purpose. He's got to learn to block it out.
jingling change in his pocket, right? And that kind of, you know, and those, I think those are less, I think, of the things that I felt uncomfortable with in that video, more about, you know, how he demonstrated how to actually carry yourself and stuff like that kind of bothered me, you know, but again, I'm not, I look at Tiger Woods as an athlete. That's how I like to look at him. I like to see what he's accomplished, and I followed. And as a medical person, I'm certainly astounded by some of these athletes and their ability to come back from these catastrophic injuries. It just blows me away. It gives me hope to talk to patients myself when they have these surgeries. And I say, well, you know, you're not Tiger Woods, but look at this is what he was able to accomplish with that. Now, if you can accomplish a third of that, this is a, you know, a great outcome here. Let's get moving. If Tiger can do that, you can do this. And so I often refer to him. I also talk about Tiger Woods, like, you know, Tiger Woods golfs and I golf, and golf's certainly not the problem. He's just much better at it than I am. Whenever I'm talking about anything.
Grant, it's awesome to have Leading Edge Physiotherapy involved in the Face-Off show again before every Oilers game. Just tell us where people can find you guys and how's business.
Yeah, you know, we're happy to be providing a positive force here during these times and keeping people going, because life is continuing on even during this COVID time. So we've got 6 locations, soon to be 7. So Spruce Grove is going to be opening up here in the springtime. We're pretty excited about that. And just check us out at leadingedgephysio.com. And, you know, you can bet your money I'm going to probably write a blog about this one, because there's just so much to talk about with this injury. And people are asking, my text lines have been lighting up because everybody knows I'm a fan and just wanting my opinion. And again, everybody listening out there, it's my opinion and just kind of me sitting on the outside, giving people an idea of what he's going to be facing. But I'm cheering for him, and I hope the rest of the world is too.
Yeah, awesome stuff. Grant, thanks for outlining that. You're very good at explaining that in a way that people can understand. We really appreciate it. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show, buddy. All the best to you and your family.
You bet, Reed. I love your chuckle, by the way. Your chuckle just makes me smile, so keep doing that for me, okay?
Okay, thanks for that. That's Grant Fedoruk from Leading Edge Physiotherapy, looking into the Tiger Woods.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Injury, and he and I were sharing some reflections on his career too. It's 7:50 Inside Sports on 630 Chet.
Black ocean, cold and dark. I am the hungry shark.
Okay, good to have you tuning in tonight. So we'll take a final look at the scoreboard before we hand it over to Charles Adler. It is the Maple Leafs winning in overtime 2-1 against Calgary. Dramatic end of the game. The Leafs went ahead with about 3.5 minutes left. Or pardon me, the Flames went ahead with about 3.5 minutes left. Nylander tied it at 18:32 of the third. Nylander won it. 1:06 into overtime. So the Maple Leafs beat Calgary 2-1 in overtime. Flyers get by the Rangers 4-3. Kevin Hayes, the game winner in that game, his 7th goal of the season. Chris Kreider had a hat trick for the Rangers, all 3 goals. He is now up to 8 on the season. After the first period, the Wild lead the Avalanche 1-0. Zuccarello's 3rd of the season. Also after the first, Anaheim leading the Coyotes 1-0. Comtois has the goal there. No score about 8 minutes in between the Blues and the Kings. The Lightning shut out the Hurricanes 3-0, and it was the Stars defeating the Panthers 3-0. Oilers tomorrow will take on the Vancouver Canucks. Game starts at 8. The faceoff show will start at 6. Actually, busy day tomorrow, and it's going to be 3 games in the North Division. The Canadians will play the Jets. The Flames continue their road trip to take on the Senators. Flames have a bunch of games with the Senators coming up, so possibly a chance for them to make up a little bit of ground. And that'll be the first game for the Canadians with Dominique Ducharme behind the bench, as Claude Julien was fired earlier today. He and Kirk Muller let go. You know, Kirk, I loved watching Kirk Muller play, especially when he played for the Canadians. He was always one of my favorite guys to watch. I just thought he was such a good, rugged, all-around good offensive player as well. So, and you know, he's gone through, wasn't he the head coach in Carolina for a while, a couple stints with the Canadians too. So he gets relieved of his duties along with Claude Julien. So we'll see how Montreal rebounds from that. All right, Bob Stauffer as Oilers Now from noon to 2 tomorrow. I also want to thank again everybody who took part in 630 Chet Hart Pledge Day today. The total got up over $500,000 donated for the Mazankowski Alberta Heart Institute, which is just an incredible facility here in Edmonton. And it was really interesting for me to hear some of the stories from patients and from doctors and nurses and researchers who all make that facility go and who helps so many people year after year. I mean, heck, I interviewed a woman who had a heart transplant 6 months ago and who had been having heart troubles since 2001 and was finally able to get that taken care of. She lived in Newfoundland, came to Edmonton specifically to be treated at the Maz, and now she's on her road to recovery from having a heart transplant. Just some awesome stuff today. And thanks to everybody who got involved with that. You heard from Kelly Rudy tonight. You heard from Eric Engels, and we just talked to Grant Fedoruk. Oilers Now, noon to 2 tomorrow. Face-off show at 6. Thanks to Dave Campbell. He's the producer of Inside Sports. Your studio producer this evening is the one and only Kellen Kennedy. My name's Reed. Have a great night.
630 CHED Inside Sports with Reed Wilkins. Weekdays at 6 on 630 CHED.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.